The Talk of the Northwest, The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. 3 minutes past nine on this Friday, the 19th of June, 2026. You're very welcome along to the last Greg Hughes Show of the week. And it's a busy one. Lots coming up. We have our Friday panel. And then in the second hour, we've got a lovely package, actually, by the way, on Little Angels School as well. That and so much more besides. So stick about. We want you involved in the conversation throughout, though, of course. 086 60 25,000. That's the WhatsApp and the text number. 086 60 25,000. You can also give us a call on 074 91 25,000, or email comments at highlandradio.com. If you want to watch the program, by the way, it's streamed as a visual presentation for you every single day. You can just go onto YouTube and search Highland Radio Ireland, and that means you can watch it across your smart devices, but also on your smart TV or your Fire Stick, and we're also on Facebook. Right, let's say good morning to Ben Harkin, chairperson of Ogra Fianna Fáil in Donegal, and author, of course, as well. We spoke to him about some of his work in that regard. Hi, Ben.
Hi, Greg. Thanks very much for having me.
Good to have you with us. Lovely to welcome back onto the programme Dr. Peter O'Rourke, former consultant orthopaedic surgeon. Good morning to you, Peter.
Morning, Greg.
Are you former? You still would travel and do the work that you do, don't you, surgeries, or are you actually retired now?
I'm retired from clinical practice. I did a couple of trips to Vietnam when we were doing a charity work, but I think I've passed that stage.
All right, that's not an ongoing process. Okay. Councillor Jimmy Brokens, Cathaoirleach of the Donegal Municipal District. Jimmy, are you there?
Yeah, thanks very much, Greg. Something wrong with the camera today,
there certainly is, and I can tell you precisely.
I'm here anyway.
I can tell you precisely what it is, because I've been doing this too long. You've a little security slide on the front of your camera. I wonder, is it over the camera? On your you're on a laptop, I'd take it.
Yeah, laptop.
Well, look, there he is. See, I'll keep you right by. You didn't think you were going to hide for us that easy, do you? Right, good to have you with us, Jimmy. Thanks very much. No, you're okay. Right, so listen, before we go into this, I'm fully conscious that this is four gentlemen having this conversation, but this is a matter that everyone has a say in. It's just a happenstance that the panel is all men today. But anyway, the three-day wait in relation to abortion was explicitly put into the draft law back in 2018, and I think it's generally accepted that this was to reassure middle-ground voters who were unsure about repeal. By scrapping it now, and that process is underway, is the Oireachtas moving the goalposts and undermining the democratic mandate of the referendum, or is it simply fixing a patronising, unmedical barrier that harms women? You've got the most medical experience. I'll start with you, Peter O'Rourke.
Thank you. From a legal point of view, I don't know if the three-day rule really makes that much difference. There's been figures put out over the number of people who went for a possible termination and then didn't actually follow through on it. But as far as I'm aware, my knowledge of these things is rather limited, but I think it's you're talking about an oral medication that is given to the patient. I don't think they take it on the spot. So I suspect the three-day rule doesn't mean that much, because if the patient is given the medication on the day they visit the doctor, they don't have to take it for 3 days. So I don't think it makes that much difference. And I think people's reaction to the whole thing about the three-day rule, as you say, is their own prejudice is possibly the wrong word to use, but their own feelings on the subject, I think, determines their reaction. So if you're very much pro-life, you will think the three-day rule must stay. If you're pro-choice, then you'll think it's a deterrent and it's an unnecessary restriction to put on women. So, as you say, four men here passing comment on it. We're digging ourselves holes if we make too many judgments.
But I think it's important everyone speaks on this. For an example, you know, the church is predominantly men. Where are they? They're not speaking on this at all. And there are some people who follow religion quite closely that might appreciate an intervention or some moral guidance or what have you. So I think, I flagged it from the beginning that for some it might seem a bit bizarre, but at the same time, we're not dictating to women. We're talking about legislation here. But you talked about, Peter, you know, whether you're pro-life or pro-abortion that really, you know, you'll have. The point is that we voted, people voted with this in there. Now, I don't believe the tablet is given on the first appointment. That would be given on a subsequent appointment. So, you know, there are in excess of 10,000 women that went for that first appointment and didn't return for a second appointment or after the 3 days at all. So people might look at that. Now, we don't know how many of those without the 3 day wait would have just had a consultation and left without a tablet anyway, right? But the point is that people voted for that space there for maybe if they were being coerced into having an abortion, that space maybe where they could seek counsel in that regard. So on the basis of it, are you prepared to say, right, look, if that's what's the way it should be, that's the way it should be, or would you prefer to see it retained?
I'm quite happy to see it removed. We're working on the assumption that the only reason that the actual referendum passed was because the 3 day rule was in there. And there's no proof of that. So the people weren't given an option to have a 3 day rule or not have a 3 day rule. So I don't know if it actually influenced the outcome of the referendum. So we're making assumptions that it actually did and people voted for it. They didn't vote for the 3 day rule. They vote for the actual changes rather than the specific element to it.
Yeah, I think you talk about those that are pro-life, pro-abortion. Obviously, a referendum to pass requires a lot of people somewhere in the middle. And I do believe, I personally believe, though it's anecdotal, you are quite right. We have no proof that the 3 day wait and us being told that it were, you know, safe and rare, you know, would have swung people one way or other. But it is democracy. That's where we're at. Ben Harkin, what's your view on this? Your party leader, I know you're not a member of the Dáil, by the way, so I'm not trying to cast you in there, but Micheál Martin had stated that he was in favour of this being removed. He gave party members a free vote, but it seems the majority of Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael voters or TDs voted to retain this, but enough voted with Sinn Féin for it to be for it to pass. That's as much for the listeners as anyone else. What's your views?
Yeah, so you're spot on, Greg. I think it was 30 Fianna Fáil TDs voted against the change, and I think it was 23 Fine Gael TDs voted against the change. I think it's important that government TDs were allowed to have a free vote. It's obviously a moral issue, and I think it's important that they're allowed that. I think it's good to see, obviously, you don't want to seem maybe good about things like abortion, but I think it's good to see in politics, a more productive type of politics, where there's at least something that's happening across the three parties and not just something that's happening down the line of sort of opposition and government. Less in the past, Micheál Martin, I suppose, like I says, I would agree that it was good to let people vote as they choose on a moral issue, but I think maybe he did try and sway it by saying what he was going to do before the vote happened. He'd be happy enough, I suppose, that it passed. But listen, I think a lot of TDs, I suppose there was obviously that split in the original referendum. Yes or no, and TDs seem to stick pretty much with how they voted in that.
What's your feelings, though, on some people feeling that this is tinkering with democracy, that people voted for one thing and now they're seeing something else?
Yeah, like laws have to adapt when evidence changes. I think, as Peter said, I don't know if the evidence did change so much in this case. There was no, I think, overwhelming evidence that this was delaying things or anything like that there. But I think that you have to respect what persuaded voters in the referendum. We obviously don't know. I was checking last night. There aren't any polls to say what people thought was important. But I think people did see that as something important. I couldn't vote at the time, but I remember doing a project around social media trends at the time and that. And it seemed to be something that was important to people. So people will be disappointed by it. But
so again, I think the next, I think
a long time, it's 8 years ago, you know, that the referendum happened.
It is. I think the next sort of vote we might have in this space, and I don't want to sound insensitive, is assisted dying. There's a big push to get assisted dying over the line. And in that debate, don't you know, it'll be framed. We will hear the horrible stories of people being trapped in their deteriorating bodies, and they want reliefs from that, and they should be in. And we'll be told it's rare, and it's not about putting pressure on older people who feel a burden to their family. And then people might vote in favour of that. And then, independent research commissioned, an NGO might be commissioned by the government, and it might find that, let's broaden that out. Do you know what I mean? So does this not really potentially sort of undermine people's participations in referendi or trust in them?
Yeah, well, I suppose the referendum was 8 years ago, you know, and so there has been a significant bit of time in that there. I think, though, people that would have voted against it will be disappointed in this here. I think assisted dying is obviously a very different...
No, but my I understand, but do you get my point, though? Because we'll be told it's rare and it's for very extreme cases and this, that and that. It's not that long ago, for an example, that a young girl with depression was allowed to terminate her life in Europe. That's the point I'm saying. I'm just wondering, will this have wider ramifications? I don't want to get into the conversation about assisted dying per se, but I'm just trying to frame it.
I suppose what I would say is, you know, we don't live in a direct democracy. We're in a representative democracy. And I suppose that's why it's important... you know, during times of elections, that these are the decisions that the politicians will have to make. It's not always just the thing that comes up on, you know, for that election or that year, that there are these big decisions. And I think that you have to, I suppose, vote for your elected representatives in the idea that they will be making decisions on something like this here, on these big topics.
It's an interesting point, because that is our system. So, you know, whether there's full awareness of that is besides the point, but that's the system we have. Councillor Jimmy Brogan, what's your views on this?
Well, so far we haven't mentioned the woman, like, you know, and I think women should be trusted in these situations. Women who decide to go for termination, like, they don't take these decisions lightly, you know. And I think, you know, decisions about pregnancy, you know, should be left down to the woman themselves. They can obviously in consultation with the doctors and stuff, you know, but... No, I think, like I say, women don't take these decisions lightly, you know, and I think that mandatory 3-day rule sort of implies that, you know, we don't trust women to make these decisions, like, you know. And listen, as you say, there's four men here talking about it, like, you know, and I think the decision should be left to the women themselves and not impose a rule that, you know, in some way might, you know, affect the women themselves, you know. And, like, the Oireachtas members who made these decisions, you know, they hear a lot of evidence, you know, that we don't hear. You know, there'd be committee hearings and, you know, expert reports and public consultations and the whole lot. Like, you know, and, you know, I think, you know, the
Are we not a responsibility, Jimmy, though? I mean, just because we've got different bits and pieces, have we not a responsibility to have this conversation, though? As I say, it's just a happenstance that there isn't a woman on this panel, but even if there were, we don't know what her view might be. She might be dead against removing the 3 days. You know, we accept that this is the case. Well, in Germany, in Belgium, they have had abortion for generations. They have the 3-day rule. Germany far more liberal than we might be here, yet they see it important to retain it. There are other countries with the 5-day rule. There are other countries with no rules, with no delay at all. So, like, I'm not a fan of, and I'm not saying I'm for or against, but I'm not a fan of just going, well, you know, an independent group said this, and it's down to women, and that's the end of it. Do you know what I mean? We all have to have an input, don't we?
Yeah, we all have our own choice to make, like, you know, and I think it's about choice, really. And listen, when the Eighth Amendment was repealed, you know, it was part of the, you know, I know politicians say different things, but at the end of the day, we all knew the it was transferring the power into the Oireachtas, like, you know, and the Oireachtas could change them rules at any time. There was no doubt about that when the referendum was held, you know. It's the way it is. Like, you know, the Oireachtas have decided, you know, they've, and if you don't want, like, it's a very sort of a difficult issue, because there's just so many different people have so many strong issues on both sides, you know. But listen, I just think it's a difficult issue,
but we're seeing, you know, tens of thousands of abortions. Right, and I think a lot of people voted based on them, it being fetal abnormality, instances of rape and what have you. But there is decent evidence to show now that it is being seen more based on financial circumstances, even whether the baby is a particular gender or not, or perhaps maybe, you know, in other cases. So there's far more... we have seen over the last number of years since 2019 the scope widen out. far more than what people might have voted on. A caller says, if Dr. O'Rourke thinks the three-day rule doesn't make any difference, why do away with it? Leave it as is. It was in the referendum, and that's what people voted for in the referendum. I suppose, and you don't need me to speak on your behalf, if you believe it doesn't make any difference, but independent organisations believe getting rid of it is the right thing to do, well, then you'll go with that. Is that really what you were saying, Peter?
Yes, I mean, we come back to the thing, it's men making decisions for women, and it's very difficult. I personally don't know that it makes that much difference. You can produce figures to suggest that it does. You can produce figures to suggest that it doesn't. Statistics is very useful tool for pushing your own agenda. Mm. So, I mean, I read all these statistics and I take them with a pinch of salt, because someone else can produce statistics that give you a totally contrary opinion. So I don't know that it makes that much difference. There's two aspects to the whole thing. One is the legislature changing what was a part of an amendment. The other is women's right to choice. And they're two separate things. I think women should have the right to choose. The other argument is whether the legislature should change the amendment. Those are two separate issues, I think. And I think probably we should look at them differently.
Yeah, OK, I appreciate it. Thank you very much. Indeed, just in case, just as an aside, 75% of the people that made this decision were men in the Dáil, by the way. So it is fundamentally still men that are deciding women's healthcare in the majority. We are in the company of our Friday panel, Ben Harkin, Dr. Peter O'Rourke, Councillor Jimmy Brogan. Just a quick one here, and strangely, if I had three women on the panel, I wouldn't feel I needed to clarify anything on this issue or stick in any caveats, but anyway, here we are. Many people will be aware that Jeremy Clarkson's diagnosis on the farm has struck a major chord with rural communities. Obviously, he is a very well-known character, and Clarkson Farm is a hugely popular show, and people who watched the episodes released during the week would have found out that he had an aggressive cancer affecting his prostate. Well, in Ireland, where farmers are notoriously reluctant to take time off to see a GP and often view physical ailments as just part of the job, can a high-profile UK media moment like this genuinely break through the unique stoicism of the rural Irish male? What do you think, Councillor Jimmy Brogan? Could this be an opportunity, really, to make sure men are checking themselves and getting their checkups, etc.?
Yeah, I think it's a good opportunity, because we all know Irish men, well, I'm not sure if it's men all over the world, but Irish men especially don't visit the doctor probably as often as they should. And especially farmers, you know, as you said, you know, pain and fatigue is often something that farmers just have to live with. You know, I do a wee bit of farming myself now. But but I've seen my dad over the years as well. Like, you know, he running the farm, like, you know, you're always tired, and, you know, if you hurt yourself, you just get on with it, you know. And I think it is a good opportunity now for farmers to, you know, just think about it for a while, like, you know, because, you know, you see a lot of young men or a lot of dying very young, you know, and, you know, if things can be prevented, you know, then they should be, like, you know. And if people should go to the doctor, get themselves regular checks, and if they think there's something wrong, they definitely should go to the doctor, like, you know. Mm. And hopefully this will be a wake-up call for people, like, you know.
Yeah, I don't think it will, but you would hope it would be, right? But
at least it's a chance, it's an opportunity.
Exactly, and that's why I'm not wasting it here, and I wanted to bring it up. Ben Harkin, what's your view? I mean, is this something we could capitalise on? Because we do need to increase the messaging or find a way. This is talking about men's health in this regard feels to me about like it's good to talk. We keep saying it, but I'm not sure how we're getting, are people really talking more and asking how are you and meaning it? How can we sort of turn this type of momentum, Ben, into particularly men in this case, you know, paying more attention to their health?
Yeah, well, listen, fair play to, I suppose, Jeremy Clarkson for being public about it. And I suppose if it convinces one person, you know, to go and look about themselves a bit better, I think that that's a positive. I think Irish men of a certain age maybe are bad at doing that. I think that it's difficult for one event to sort of cause people to change their behaviour or to change their idea on something. And oftentimes you have to be sort of proactive in going out. I seen just this morning, the Donegal Masters team had an evening, I think on Wednesday evening in Convoy, where they had sort of people there that were testing different screenings and all that there around physical health. And then I think there was somebody giving a bit of a talk around mental health. I think maybe things like that there, initiatives like that there, where you're going out to people rather than sort of trying to raise awareness to expect people to come to you, I think is a better way of doing it. But it's good to see positive events like that there. And yeah, listen, the more you talk about it, like I said, if you can convince one person to make a healthier choice to go and look about themselves, that's a good thing.
Yeah, there's one thing that came into my mind that I haven't heard anyone else say, and I think this talks to really how my mind works, and I'm not sure if it's good or a bad thing. He got this diagnosis in May, and he held off until this week to reveal that diagnosis because that's when the show was airing. And I couldn't help but think that, not May, sorry, it was last year, but I couldn't help but thinking that how many men may have seen their prostate cancer advance, but may have gone and got a checkup if they'd have seen it at the time. They held off for a premiere, and it's just, I was wondering, like, you know, really, was that the ethical right thing to do? But maybe, anyway. What do you think, Peter, as the medical professional in this quad?
Well, in defense of Jeremy Clarkson, he wouldn't have got the profile if it wasn't at the same time as the program
Good
because
point.
people are going to see it in the program. But I think what people need to start realizing is we had the 1926 census coming out, and the average life expectancy for men was 57. Now it's something like 83 or so. If we live to 83, the chances are longer. The chances are every single one of us will get cancer of some kind. Prostate cancer is the sole significant male form of cancer, and it is something that is easily dealt with now. Treatment has improved, and the response to treatment is excellent. I mean, I got myself checked out recently because my PSA, prostate specific antigen, was raised. I mean, I think every man over the age of about 55 should be having it checked every couple of years, and over the age of 60, probably on a yearly basis. It's a simple blood test. There's been lots of screening for women's cancers, breast and cervical cancer, but now we're focusing more on other ones that are treatable, and prostate cancer is so treatable now if you get it early.
But I think
So,
the problem is not the medical advances and all of that, Peter. It's getting lads into the GP in the first instance and saying, I heard Peter O'Rourke on the radio. It was off the back of Jeremy Clarkson's diagnosis. I might get my PSA checked. It's not necessarily, changing people's attitudes enough.
but it's people knowing that there is something out there.
Yeah, true.
I mean,
We're lucky,
if
aren't
there,
we? We're lucky to have that.
well,
Why
yeah,
aren't we
there's,
availing of it?
well, people used to think there was no cure, so what's the point in getting a diagnosis if you can't do anything about it? But to know that there is a simple test which can effectively make the whole diagnosis irrelevant, because treatment is so good these days that if you get a diagnosis at an early stage, it's fire and forget. It's no longer an issue.
Yeah. You noticed the PSA levels were raised. And that put into my mind even earlier than what you mentioned. It's no harm to go in and get a baseline, I presume, even, when 45, 50, whatever age it might be, so that it's easier to notice any changes. Or is there a what's your view in relation to that?
To be honest, it's not an area that I know very much about. I think under the age of about 50, it's fairly unusual, but it's a test that if it's elevated above a certain level, four is the level, then you follow up on it.
Okay.
But I mean, again, that changes as you get older, because if you're in your 70s or 80s, it's a different level. So I think it's one of those things. If you're going in for a well health check, most GPs will do the test now. It's up there with your cholesterol, and again, the amount of people who are on statins for high cholesterol, be it men or women, so they're getting blood tests done. Just throw another one into the mix, and if it comes up positive, you get treated, and then you can forget about it.
Jimmy, I'm looking at you and you're looking at me, and I kind of feel that maybe both you and I we need to be honest here, and we're not checking stuff out. Are you? Maybe you are. I'm not. I don't know.
Well, I haven't been to the doctor now for a health check for a year or two, but I do go not that regular, but now and again, like
Yeah,
every couple of
yeah.
years I would. But I think younger men, I think, are a wee bit, and I like to class myself as younger man still. Younger men are a wee bit better than the older generation. Like, I think the older generation, especially like farmers, wouldn't they just wouldn't. They would put it off and put it off as long as they could, you know. And I think it's, you know, I think it's valuable that Jeremy Clarkson's come forward. I think it's very valuable, and it will raise the, you know, raise the sort of a little in the media, like, you know, it'll raise a profile of it, you know. And hopefully, if only one or two men went to the doctor and got a test and it
Yeah, they
worked out,
will.
you
Yeah,
know,
for sure.
it would be worth it, you know. So you have to commend them for that, like, you know. I wouldn't be a big fan of Jeremy Clarkson myself personally, but
I don't mind him. I don't mind him. He's all right, isn't he? He's quite.
Well, he's all right, but
Yeah.
you know, I wouldn't be watching every episode, you know.
No, I love Top Gear. I don't know. The Clarkson's Farm, I'm a bit indifferent. But anyway, Peter, just out of interest and not prying, someone like you who's was always in and out of the hospital, and I know your area of expertise was more in keeping our knees and hips and other things moving, all that type of stuff. But are medical professionals better at keeping an eye on stuff that they know about, if you know what I mean, or do you just really fall into the, you know, the general male population?
I think doctors generally fall into the general male population. We're not renowned for looking after ourselves. It was an interesting question. I was just renewing my medical council registration. One of the questions was, do you have a GP?
Okay.
And to be honest, I've sort of had a GP, but since I retired, I have a GP definitely. But most doctors self-treat, and certainly some of them suffer as a result of that.
It's astonishing, isn't it? Okay. Right, just a couple of comments before the break on the issue of abortion. Changing these core provisions without another referendum is a breach of democratic faith in the government. But that is the government, as I think it was Jimmy pointed out, and also Ben, that is the structure of our democracy. Gran, you say, maybe the 3 day should have been retained for under 20s, as it's such a life-changing issue, which is an interesting comment. Do you trust politicians on any issue at this stage? I don't know. Well, there's not a huge turnout for elections, so maybe people don't. Another, the question asked of this so-called independent group was confirmation bias. For example, what if the question was what protections are there in place to protect women and babies from abortion? The answer may have been different. Greg, many European countries have this safeguard. Also, many people voted for abortion, believing it to be only a few rare circumstances and to have a cooling off period with counselling being offered. I'm completely alarmed at the doctor's comments on the 3 day. I thought doctors were in the business of saving lives. Healthcare heals, abortion kills. Well, there's women's healthcare as well. And Dr. O'Rourke is really, and Peter, you can come in here speaking in your personal capacity. And I think really effectively, you sounded to me as if you were saying you will go with, you will go with whatever is deemed to be best. And as I say, there's the woman's healthcare in mind here as well. It's at the very early stages of a pregnancy.
Yeah, I think it's difficult as a man to make judgments on what's best for women. And in my life, I've tried to avoid it wherever possible.
During the campaign to repeal the Eighth Amendment, the 3 day wait was introduced as a safeguard to reassure voters who were undecided. Clearly, the only intention of this was for the government to get it over the line. I love all of our listeners, but some people sort of semi-listen. It's nice to hear something about men's health and Highland for a change, especially when it's Men's Health Week. Why does it take a famous man in the media for Highland to do an article about it, though? We speak about men's health all of the time. Another, what puts men off getting the PSA test is they can't get a doctor's appointment. You can. I think really what it is that we just pretend that everything's okay, or we put it off because we're afraid it could be high and we don't want to deal with it at this time. And some are good at it, some are bad. A caller says, what about the father in the case of abortion? Do they have any rights at all? What about the mental health of the father? Yeah, of course. But I mean, my view would be in a relationship that's a healthy relationship, there is a consultation there. Sometimes the father can be a relation. Sometimes the father can be a stranger. Sometimes the father can be gone. So it's not a one size fits all. Just a couple of more comments on abortion before we get to our next question. I'm a social studies teacher. When we do anything, we have to be careful of condemnation bias. We're looking at the barriers to abortion. The 3 day wait is a barrier. What they should have done is, what are the barriers and protections for women and babies? Any fair study needs two questions. The three-day wait is a barrier and a protection, they say. What about the father? I've read that one already. Thank you very much indeed. Right. Courts right across the country, including our own local sittings, have faced widespread disruption this week due to a three-day nationwide strike by criminal defence solicitors. The row centres on the Department of Justice plan coming in July, on July 1st in fact, which scraps the old system of paying solicitors for every individual court appearance, replacing it with a single flat fee of €455 per case, and then there's a subsequent €60... That's wrong. That's under the current system. Justice Minister Jim O'Callaghan maintains this is a necessary reform to tackle unnecessary adjournments and stop a system he claims is being gamed for extra taxpayers' fees. However, our solicitors argue that after 17 years without pay restoration since the financial crash cuts, this new flat fee accounts or actually amounts to a further unilateral pay cut that completely ignores the reality of complex drawn-out cases. So the question, are solicitors entirely justified in striking to finally secure a long-delayed pay restoration and protect access to justice, or is the minister right to try and clamp down on a legal aid system that the government insists is being abused at the taxpayers' expense? Ben Harkin, what say you?
There's, I suppose, two good sides to this. I seen in the Daily Mail this morning, they have an article on the front page about the fact that there are some firms that are offering legal aid. They're charging for legal aid secretly under the table, and then they're charging their client then. So listen, there is abuse of this system, obviously, and the department's definitely right to do what they can as taxpayers. You know, I think we're obligated to have a department that does its best to reduce waste. There is an issue, though, with this here, and I think the Irish Council for Civil Liberties brought it up. If we reduce this so much that solicitors don't want to work for legal aid, then what we'll have is courts will grant legal aid to people, people who need it, vulnerable people, young people, and there won't be a solicitor there then to represent them. And that's an issue, you know, and the justice system has to be blind. It has to be blind for people, you know, regardless of your means. And if they can't get a solicitor, then that's going to be a very, very serious issue. The delays that the department are blaming on this here are significant. We can't have cases like this here going on and on and on. But I think there could be some sort of a compromise, perhaps like a sliding scale, a fee, and then maybe a fee that goes on over time and gets, you know, less as time goes on or something like that there. There are other, the report that the department done on this as well brought in other things. For example, like the judges will grant legal aid and they might never check the means of the people. You know, that could be something that maybe if that there was more focused on, could we make sure that people can still get the representation. We don't want waste. We can't have waste, especially in something like this here. But people need to have access to solicitors as well, and that's what the whole justice system is about.
Is there not a danger here, though, that we could see something similar that's reported out of America, whereby, you know, this new flat rate system means that solicitors encourage or are quicker to encourage a plead in a case or to not pursue every angle, you know what I mean, so that the defendant doesn't actually get the best representation? Is it a bit of a race to the bottom in terms of, you know, people's liberty and rights?
Absolutely. And then that's what, you know, solicitors are saying. And they're saying that so the department are saying basically that cases with legal aid take longer than cases without. And that there is because basically solicitors are trying to get more, you know, days, you know, out of this
year. More bang for their buck, really.
Yeah, but I suppose what solicitors are saying is that these cases are complicated and that, you know, their clients know that they're going to go on for a long time, and that's why they need legal aid to support them a long time. There are, the report's very clear on this. There is abuse of the system. There is solicitors that are, you know, I think there was one where a firm was showing their solicitors how to get as much out as possible. But there are solicitors in Donegal that have worked very hard for years, that, you know, have worked for cases that have gone on for year over year. And, you know, they haven't, I suppose, what they would feel, I know, haven't compensated fairly for that, for the work that they've put in for their clients.
I'm not sure if this is where we'll end up, but in the United States, 97% of federal convictions and 94% of state convictions are the result of guilty pleas. And we don't, you know, someone might plead guilty if they're under pressure to do so, even if they're not, because they could be told, well, if you don't plead guilty, you could be facing 10 years, but if you plead guilty, we could get you out in 6 months. I don't know. What do you think, Peter?
I think, again, statistics are being used to create a picture. I mean, one of the things that was said was that it takes three times as long to get a legal aid case through. If you're paying your solicitor, you're going to want the thing dealt with as quickly as possible and as cheaply as possible for you. If you're not paying for it, then you don't give a damn. So I suspect you'll find that a lot of adjournments are a case of clients not turning up or consultations not happening beforehand. So it's easy to say it takes three times as long, but it's a bit like medical outpatients. When you're not paying for an outpatient clinic appointment, 20% of people don't turn up. If you go to a private clinic and you have to pay in advance, you're not going to miss your appointment. So I suspect there is an element of that. In regard to things like if there's the case doesn't go ahead and they get a 60 euro fee, I don't think many solicitors would be rushing to go to court and stand around to see if a case goes ahead for a 60 euro fee. So I think there's certainly abuses in the system, but I suspect it's isolated rather than across the board. And I mean, they're talking about a fee of 430, I think was
Four five
mentioned.
five.
Yeah, for a case that, I mean, that sounds like a very small amount across the board for cases that could be, last 5 minutes or have 5 or 10 appearances. I think you cannot apply the same rule for every case because sometimes it will be very complex and take a lot longer, and sometimes it'll be sort of a very quick and straightforward thing.
Yeah, what do you think, Jimmy? Because go on ahead, yeah.
Yeah, I was just thinking, if the government, or the legal profession, have they investigated these abuses that we're talking about, and what action have they taken against any solicitor that they found that's abusing the system? Obviously, if you're abusing every other system, social welfare, wherever, you're not belong brought to task, So if the solicitors are abusing the system, then obviously they should be reprimanded for it. And like Jim O'Callaghan's a lawyer, a barrister himself, so if he's seen these practices now as Justice Minister, should he not be? What's he done to reprimand any solicitors that are abusing the system? Because at the end of the day, good defence is something that should be available to everybody, regardless of your means. And as you say, you could end up in a system where the people who can't afford a defence will end up having to plead guilty or whatever, to a lesser charge or something, just to get some, representation, so. Listen, at the end of the day, I think solicitors, well, if they're abusing the system, then they should be reprimanded for it, just like everybody else should be,
But your reference there, Peter, if I'm correct, would be the defendant dragging it out or the solicitor dragging it out?
It can be either.
Yeah.
I mean,
But then
it
why should the solicitor pick up the why should why should then the solicitor pick up the can for defendants dragging it out?
I'm not sure I
Because
understand.
at the moment, right, they get a fee plus 60 per appearance, right? So
Yeah.
that can drag things out. You could have a very, you could be frustrated with the client you represented. They're not turning up. They're doing this, that, and then. Now, under the flat fee, the defendant could still behave the same, but the solicitor would only get 455 in total.
Yeah, I mean, would it be worthwhile doing the cases? I mean, the other thing is the court system is so slow. I mean, solicitors can stand around in a courtroom for 3 or 4 hours for a 5 minute case. They could be hanging around all day and the case never going ahead. So one of the things that isn't taken into account is you say an attendance in court, but they only get paid if the case is actually called. If they hang around all day and the case isn't reached, then they don't get paid for that. So there's a lot of other bits and time, and effectively, when you're paying a solicitor for something like this, you're paying for their time, and you don't get a hell of a lot for 450 euros in a solicitor's time.
Ben, the one thing that's come through on this, and I think, Jim O'Callaghan's clever because he's able maybe to tap into public attitudes in relation to this, is people saying, look, it's crazy that we're seeing the same names often in courts week after week after week, every single time they're entitled to legal aid. It's a huge drain on the public finances. There should be some sort of a cap on your entitlement to legal aid. Some people saying, two or three times, and then others saying we should be able to claw it back, through wages or social welfare. Would that be something that you'd be in favour of? We do see this rotating door to the prison, and people constantly seem to be availing of free legal aid.
Yeah, and listen, we can see articles, of people that have a fairly significant rap sheet. I suppose I think that actually that idea perhaps of taking out of social welfare or wages or something like that there, yeah, I think that could be an idea. But we have to remember, I suppose, that there are people that use legal aid that are vulnerable. And while we might start with an idea that stops abuse of maybe a very small population that is frequently coming in front of the court, if you do that and you stop vulnerable people or young people from getting their fair access to justice, then that sort of, I would think anyway, makes a mockery of the justice system, which again is supposed to be blind to your means and blind to your ability. So I think that always has to be to the forefront of any idea on
But
it.
it can't be blind to abuse, surely.
No, not blind to abuse. No, as in blind to your ability, your
No, I
means when you are in
understand.
front of the court. It
Can't.
can't be blind to abuse, absolutely not. And that's why I suppose Jim O'Callaghan is now, like, the article today was that the department wants to bring sort of a criminal conviction, Denis Lister, that is seen to abuse this system.
Councillor Brogan, would you see this as an opportunity to have the conversation about potential abuses of free legal aid? You know, people availing of it time and time again, with no clawback at all.
Yeah, well, you do. Listen, it does stick in your craw when you see people that are, well, you hear of people that are in and out of jail and they're using legal aid or free legal aid all the time. But the vast majority of people who use free legal aid don't use it, or, you know, aren't using it again and
Okay,
again.
yeah.
The vast majority of people, when they need it, and it might only be one, probably once in their lifetime, maybe, you know, that's the majority. You know, you have a small minority of people that are in and out of jail. And listen, that's just, you know, it's very difficult to do anything about it. But you can't take something away from the vast majority of people just to because there's a small number of people that are abusing it. Well, not abusing it. That's their entitlement to free
Okay,
legal
I
aid.
get you. Yep,
No.
you can't abuse the system that you're entitled to. I get you. Okay, final question. Staying with you, Jimmy. Big rally fan. Are you into the rally? Looking forward to this
No.
weekend. Biggest sporting event.
Not really. I'm not a rally fan, to be honest. Listen, it's a great thing for Donegal. It brings a lot of people to Donegal, so the
So you see
rallies are
you
good.
saying that in South Donegal.
Yeah. Well, there's still hotel people staying in Donegal town, you know, and all around South
Of
Donegal,
course there are.
that are going to the rally, you know. So listen, it's great for Donegal. It brings thousands and thousands of people, you know. So, but I personally am a rally fan myself.
All
But
right.
listen, play to anybody, and just as long as everybody gets there safely and gets home safely, that's the main thing, you know.
Ben, you a rally fan?
No, it's not my kind of
I
thing now,
feel
so
we're
it
going to have a
isn't.
clean sweep here, and I haven't even got to PT yet, but go on.
No, listen, I'll be keeping an eye on the results. There's two chairman fillers, Aaron Reid and Keelan Reader, are in the junior rally, so listen, I'll be keeping an eye on them, and I hope they do well. But no, it's not my kind of thing now.
What about you, Peter? Come on, surprise me.
Wouldn't be a fan, and I was certainly very relieved when I wasn't rostered to be on call the weekends of the rally.
Why, what would you see?
Well, fortunately, there haven't been too many injuries, but there
Yeah.
have been a few significant ones over the years.
Okay.
But it's usually the emergency department is usually fairly busy, and by default, we usually got a fair amount to do. So it was a weekend to be on call to be avoided if you
I
possibly
suspect
could.
that most of the injuries were sustained on the main street and not on the track. Okay. Peter O'Rourke, thank you very much for your time as always. Dr. Peter O'Rourke, look after yourself. Ben Harkin, great to see you again. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Greg.
Councillor Brogan, lovely to chat to you. Look after yourself. Have a good weekend.
Thanks very much, Greg.
Bye bye. On the issue of free legal aid, if anyone who gets free legal aid was charged €10 every time they appeared in court, you might see a difference. Many of them appear, and the first thing you see is 52 previous convictions. They know there's no comeback on them, and jail means nothing to many of them. Another, should a criminal be given legal aid for the umpteenth time, knowing they are guilty, should only receive legal aid for no more than three times in court, which I get that a lot into this programme. Morning, in relation to legal aid, especially for repeat offenders, make them pay for it themselves in instalments from most likely the social welfare. I don't think we should profile people in that way, but that's your view. And after two offences, that's it, no more, they say. If men had to get a scan in a van in a car park outside the council offices, they wouldn't go. But women are expected to. It's a disgrace in a so-called wealthy country. I hear that about the breast check, and I presume that's what you're referencing. But often then when we get one negative comment, what comes in is, you know, four, five, six positive comments saying that they found the space to be acceptable and the staff lovely. So it's one of those, isn't it? We're all different. Good morning, Greg. Will you let the doctor know the differences per 10,000 children are alive today and haven't been legally murdered? The only thing is in relation to that 10,000, you see, the figures aren't complete because we don't know how many of those 10,000 women wouldn't have returned even if there was no cooling off period. We just simply don't know that. Sinead from Germany: abortion is illegal in Germany, but the law allows many exceptions. The 3-day rule is because Germany is a very conservative country. Sorry, maybe I referenced it as liberal. Thank you. Conversations about the 3-day rule. I'm a woman, 4 healthy pregnancies. I was nearly 5 weeks pregnant by the time I confirmed 2 of those pregnancies, and almost immediately on the other 2. A woman does nothing but think about a pregnancy as soon as it's confirmed. By the time they make an appointment to visit the doctor, what difference does 3 days make? We've been thinking about it from the second it's confirmed. As was stated, trust women to make their own decisions. And thank you very much indeed for that. It's really important we get all views on this programme, because we're not pushing any particular agenda. We just want a space where people can express all different points of views and feel they can do so comfortably. Before 10, I want to remind you, we've got 2 rally-themed podcasts for you available on our website and wherever you get your podcasts. Just search The Greg Hughes Podcast. Absolutely huge response to our chat with Gary Jennings. I think it's the biggest podcast so far that we've done. Thousands of people right across the country listening, downloading it. It's still there. It's still very, very interesting. It's a remarkable tale, even if you're not interested in rally. So if you're going to search that, The Greg Hughes Podcast, Gary spells his name with 2 R's. And we've also put out yesterday's conversation, talking about the logistics, the policing, and also the competition of the rally. That's also available as a rally special on the Highland Radio website in the listen back section, but also just search The Greg Hughes Podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Right.
The talk of the Northwest, The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Yes, it's Friday. I hope you're all feeling good. The weather's not going to be too bad for the rest of today. Nice tomorrow, which is cool. Greg, could you please give a mention to a car treasure hunt which takes place on Wednesday, June 24th, leaving from Cars of the Diamond at 7 p.m. This is part of this year's Balliol 10K fundraising, with all proceeds going to Community First Responders Kilmacrenan, Terman, Trenta, Garton, Churchill and Rise and Shine Donegal. Thank you. More than happy to do so. Sounds like a fun event, and we know it's for a very worthy cause. Are you going down to the game on Sunday? Obviously, it's going to be live here in Highland Radio. This one's actually televised as well. It's the only game RTE are televising. How do you think it's going to go? What's your feelings about it? Could this be a critical weekend for the future of Donegal GEA even? Or are you going down there cock-a-hoop and confident that we will beat Dublin in their own backyard? If you're looking forward to that game at the weekend and you want to talk about that or let us know how you think it will go, please get in touch, 086 60 25,000. Wishing Jimmy and Charlie McAteer Ballincrick a very happy 83rd birthday from all the Sweeneys. Are they twins, I wonder, Jimmy and Charlie? Regardless, happy birthday. Anne and John McKenna, Glen Finn, 50th wedding anniversary today from Margaret, Patsy and family. I always love to see such a milestone being reached. Anne and John McKenna, Glen Finn, 50th wedding anniversary. Okay, I often didn't think I'd even see 50, let alone a 50th wedding anniversary. Do you think you'll see your 50th with your man, Donna Marie?
Oh, me? Mm. Oh, God willing. God knows. You know what? We're only, you know what I mean? We're together 11 years now and we're not married yet. So we're 16.
So if you wait till the 20th anniversary, then you get married. But I think we'll count. No, listen, 50th wedding anniversary is fine. But I think in the future we'll come up with a different way to recognise together.
But see, people are getting married older as well.
And not getting married at all.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing. So I don't
Why
know.
Do you think that is? And I'm not, this is now park your own personal situation, because
yes,
that's whatever factors and it's up to you guys, whatever you do. But why do you think younger people aren't getting married? But are together? Is it financial or is it the fact that they don't feel the need to or what?
I think the pressure's not there. Before, if you had wanted to have a family or had a baby or ended up pregnant, you had to get married.
That's the first thing you had to do.
So I say that's probably a very large part of it. But as well, the financial of it, you know, like it's nearly 35,000, I think, is like the average now to get married.
Yeah, but that's because, but would it not be better? Like and this is, I'm not being anti-religion here, by the way, but if you wanted to, you could go and have go to the office in Ballybuffet, right? Wait 3 months, get married, go to a church and have a ceremony of sorts, and then have, you know, the very closest of friends for a couple of sandwiches afterwards. Would that not be better than not having anything at all an indescribable amount of time?
But if you did that, to call a spade, you'd be the talk of the town. Can you believe that? You would be. You'd be scandalised.
You see, the thing is when you get older, you don't care. I am waffling here now because it's Friday afternoon and Caroline wants to talk about serious stuff
or
Friday morning, and I kind of don't. So that's why I'm dragging out this conversation with you. But we have invited you in to set up a lovely wee package that you've put together, Donna Marie. So you've been working on this week. Where were you and what's it all about?
I was down at Little Angel School to meet some of their Olympians. Now, they have seven who headed off yesterday to go down to compete in the Special Olympics. And they are Caitlin Buchanan, Lucy Duher, Brandon Gibson, Padder McRory, O'Davin, Curtis McFadden, Aaron McNulty and Joshua Sweeney. And they're heading down, or they went down yesterday, but I wanted to get a wee catch up with them before they went.
And also it was a great week to call to Little Angels.
It was. I was down on the day that they won the Architecture Award. So there was a great buzz in the place. So there was... there was loads of cake, which was fantastic for me. It was a great day to go down. And everybody was just so excited. You know, the kids, they're so proud of themselves and they're so proud of the school winning the award. So everybody was just on a massive
high. Right, so we've got a lovely wee package, as I mentioned, coming up. Talk to us about what's in it. It's just chatting to those people, chatting to the staff as well and setting the scene for us.
Chatting to Patter and Brandon. And then we talked to Shane O'Donovan, who's the Special Olympics coordinator and he's a classroom teacher, and to Elva Dunn, the principal there, and also to Maria McCarron, who's also a classroom teacher. So we got an insight to what all the students are doing.
Okay, and here is Donna Marie's package.
Yesterday morning, seven students from Little Angel School in Letterkenny set off for the Special Olympics to represent Team Ulster. Their names are Caitlin Buchanan, Lucy Duher, Brandon Gibson, Padder McRory O'Davin, Curtis McFadden, Aaron McNulty and Joshua Sweeney. I went for a visit to meet the whole team and had a good chat with Brandon and Padder. I am joined here today by two very special people who are going to be in the Olympics.
You're back again?
Back again. Mm-hmm. And you guys are going to go and be on the team for Ulster.
Yeah.
So, Padder, are you looking forward to going to the Olympics?
Yeah.
What are you going to do whenever you're there?
Go take the bus.
You're going to take the bus down, and who's going to go on the bus with you?
Brandon and Caitlin.
And Caitlin, and the rest of your team as well?
Yeah.
And are any of your teachers going to go?
Well, Mr. Boyce.
Mr. Boyce?
Yeah.
And is there any mummies or daddies going to be on the bus?
Yeah, my mum and my dad, and Brandon's mum and dad.
And what sport will you be doing?
For the green bike and sprinkles.
The Skittles. The Skittles.
Yeah.
And isn't the Skittles, for it to explain to people at home, because they might know what it is, that's like going...
bowling. Like bowling.
Bowling. Excellent. Yeah. Brandon, you're going down too.
Yes.
And are you going up and down in the same day, or are you going to stay somewhere special?
Hotel.
You're going to sleep in the hotel. Who's going to stay in the hotel with you?
Parents.
Your parents. And what sport are you doing?
Beanbag.
The beanbag throw. And are you doing anything else?
Kicking football.
Kicking a football?
Yes.
Wow. Do you like football?
Yes.
And have you had to do loads of practicing?
Yep.
What kind of practice have you had to do?
Down in the vestry.
You're down in the vestry?
Down in the vestry.
And was it hard work?
No.
Yo?
No.
Of course not, because you're so good. You've practiced so much, is it?
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Excellent. And whenever, do you remember we were in the last day?
Yeah.
And you guys were wearing your special jackets?
Yep.
What? Why did you have those on? Is that because you're all part of a team?
Yeah. Team Ulster.
Team Ulster.
Yeah.
And we might get teacher. And teacher, how many students are going from Little Angels?
We have 7 athletes, so a mix of boys and girls, mm-hmm. and they're doing some pretty tough events. Like we've got hockey, we've got bowling, what else? We've got the beanbag throw, and that's a really hard thing to do because you're nearly up to 6 metres away, aren't you, Brandon?
Yes.
And at the end there, that was Shane O'Donovan, assistant principal, class teacher and Special Olympics coordinator at the school. Then I was speaking to classroom teacher Maria McCarron, who told me what Aaron and Curtis would be doing in their events.
Aaron McNulty and uh-huh. Curtis uh-huh. Lee McFadden uh-huh. will also be taking part. And Aaron here will be doing the bowling and throwing the beanbag.
Whoa!
Yeah, and so Curtis?
Curtis is doing the same as well. Curtis is doing the beanbag throw and he's doing the skittles as well. And another man who's been training hard as well, Curtis and Aaron. They've been down in the vestry with Ulster Olympics, Seamus Campbell mm-hmm. and Eugene, who have been really, really good to us. They've organised all the training sessions and they've told us when to come down to the vestry. So we brought the whole 7 athletes down and they looked after us and they trained us and they've just done some great work with them.
And, of course, we also have Caitlin, Lucy and Joshua, who've all been training very hard and putting in a tremendous effort as they prepare for their events. Lucy will be taking part in the hurdle step and the beanbag throw target, 2 events that require great focus, coordination and accuracy. Joshua will compete in the skittle smash and the beanbag throw, where precision will be key. And Caitlin will be showcasing her skills in the target shoot and log roll, demonstrating both accuracy and balance. Apart from doing their own events, Brandon and Patter will also be saying the oath before the games begin. Patter gave us a sneak preview.
If I win... But if I do not win, I will be brave.
Well, after speaking to the Olympians, I went over to Principal Alva Dunn and she shared how proud she is of the students.
People have been in the Special Olympics for 30 years and they've never got to represent Ulster. So for us, this is just phenomenal. It's really, really special. And we're just so excited. And we're so excited for the kids. What this has done for them is phenomenal. The confidence that it's given them, the faith in their own abilities, and just the buzz and the glow that you can see in the kids is palpable. It really is.
And they're all so excited just from chatting to them there. They can't wait to get going and they're so proud of themselves.
Oh my God, you can see some of what they were saying to you today. Like they're famous. They're so full of confidence and so full of pride in themselves. They're really, like I said, they're really buzzing from it. And we had prize giving yesterday and some of the kids got their prizes for their achievements in Special Olympics and sporting events. And they really were just so proud of themselves. And their parents are so proud. And not just that, the whole school, like their classmates are really proud as well.
It's so important to make sure that sport is a place for everyone because sports and feeding fit and healthy is what gives people that pep in their step.
Yeah. Well, the Department of Education and the in general, the world in general, the buzzword currently is well-being. And your well-being is, you know, your physical and your mental health are two... That's your wealth. That's the most important thing you have. And we talk about in school, it's regulation first. So we want our children to be their best that they can be. And for the adults and the children, so for every single person, you know, the most important thing you can do for yourself is keep yourself healthy. We do an awful lot of regulation here in the school where we go out for walks, we do different sporting activities, we have circuit training set up in the gym every day, so that up in the hall one of our teachers he's actually qualified as a PE teacher and he sets up circuits in the hall and the kids can go up and do that. And that sport is for everybody and it has to be for everybody, and that's all about inclusion as well, you know, and for us to be making sure that our kids are getting the same opportunities as their peers in other schools. So it's a hugely important thing for us. And the Special Olympics is really the pinnacle of all of that, and it's so important that they get to go there and celebrate what they can do. And what the Special Olympics does is magnificent. It makes it accessible to all of our children. So all of our children, whether they're ambulant or whether they're wheelchair users, there's a sport for them.
The Games have well and truly begun, and for myself, Donna Marie Doherty, and everyone here in Highland Radio, come on Team Ulster.
Oh, wasn't that absolutely excellent? Brilliant stuff from Donna Marie there, and brilliant interviews with the athletes as well. Absolutely wonderful. Loved that. Hope you enjoyed that too. If you missed it, I'm sure Donna Marie, if she hasn't already, will have that available on our socials to listen back. And joining with Donna Marie in all of us saying a big good luck to all of the athletes doing themselves proud, their families proud, and all of us here proud. We look forward to see how they all get on. So as you would have heard on the programme yesterday, Barry O'Neill, who is the founder and head of the Rory Gallagher International Tribute Festival in Ballyshannon, has said that 2027 is not going ahead. It follows the sudden collapse of ticketing company Tickets.ie, which has left the festival on the hook for a couple of €100,000 of debt. And they said, look, people plan this ages out, and it's just something they can't risk, and it's not going ahead next year. Roisin Duffy is from Ballyshannon and has volunteered at the Rory Gallagher Festival for the past 4 years, and it's in the family as well. Good morning, Roisin.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
Good, good. You're speaking to us from Australia at the moment, right?
I am, yes, live from Perth.
Live from Perth. Okay. And you know what? It's going to be a better line than the next one to Ballyshannon, isn't it funny? Right. So this is bad news for Ballyshannon. This is, and South Donegal and more broadly, but as a Ballyshannon woman, Roisin, obviously you can sense the loss for Ballyshannon more directly.
Absolutely. Yeah. Look, it's absolutely awful news when it came out. I suppose we actually thought it was rumours a few weeks ago, whenever it was going around about Tickets.ie collapsing. And then more recently, obviously, Barry announcing that the festival would not go ahead in 2027. I suppose as an outlook, not even just on Ballyshannon, but yes, of course it is, the amount of money that it brings to the economy, to the surrounding areas. If you even look at accommodation like Sligo, Leitrim, Fermanagh, Donegal, all them surrounding areas, we've had people staying in Ardra, like travelling the whole of Donegal to get accommodation for this is very hard. And people also book years in advance to keep their spot whenever they do get somewhere. And we've had people, like 51% of the visitors are overseas, which is huge, Greg. Mm. You know, that is a huge figure in itself. We've had people from Australia, New Zealand. And if you even look at the journey that they come on to come to Ballyshannon alone and the amount of money that they're putting into other economies and Irish economy, like we know that we have Bus Éireann run extra buses for that weekend alone to come from Dublin Airport because the amount of people that are coming. And it's very, very sad because I'd say that probably it'll be at the end for maybe some local businesses in Ballyshannon, which this festival just brings so much money. And I don't think really some people realise how much work Barry puts into this festival from the minute one festival ends to the beginning of the next one. It's 365 days a year. And I can't even imagine what Barry is going through at the moment with this on top of it.
And do you know what's almost an insult to injury is that this was the biggest festival. They changed tact, put out the money for the big names. They built it and they come. Huge ticket sales, etc. It's heartbreaking, isn't it, that they went big this year. It really worked out and the rug's been pulled under them. And there's no indemnity or there's no backup. You know, if you book a holiday and a company goes bankrupt, there's some sort of a protection there. It's crazy that we're talking hundreds of thousands of euro in Ballyshannon, Leitrim and elsewhere. A company can go bust.
Absolutely.
And the festivals are threatened with extinction. It's crazy.
Yeah. And like we already, you know, we've had locally Sea Sessions Festival has collapsed as well in Bundoran. So this has brings so much to, you know, people look forward to this weekend every single day. and they're counting down until the next event every year. We have people like, I met one man in particular was 88, like 88 years old, and he's never missed a festival. Every single year he keeps coming back, and he says to see it grow so much in every year and how different Barry makes it and how every year is so much more successful than the others. And as you said, that this has been the biggest yet, but it's probably never going to happen like this again or go ahead. It's awful.
Part of me hopes that Barry's employing sort of a shock tactic to try and maybe get people to pull the fingers out. I don't know. That's almost me being falsely optimistic, I suppose.
I think we all just need to get behind him and the local businesses and every single person, whether it be a GoFundMe page is set up again to help the festival or whatever, but everyone needs to. There's no point people saying how bad or shocked it is. You know, people need to help Barry and assist Barry in every single way to make sure that there is another Rory Gallagher festival, because otherwise it's just going to get more of a ghost town, Ballyshannon, and fall even more, you know?
Yeah, you say that. John McCarthy emailed in, hello, it should there should be a GoFundMe set up for this lost ticket money. Someone who can be trusted with this money that will put it in. My bet is hundreds of thousands of people will put money into this, as it's about Rory Festival going for years to come. And do you know what? There would be a good angle on this as well, because when the money or whatever percentage of the money is recouped down the line, be it 25-50%, you could sort of tie it into maybe a charity or something as well, so people would feel like they're supporting the festival but eventually supporting charity. So I think there's real options there if someone decides to go for it.
Even if you look at like an employment side of things, like obviously pubs employ more people for that weekend, you know, the amount of chip vans and other businesses that come to Ballyshannon for that weekend alone. You know, it's not just Ballyshannon that is going to be affected by this. It's the people, it's everyone. It's shocking.
Roisin, what time is it in Perth, if you don't mind me asking?
It's currently 5:30 in the evening.
Okay.
Dinner time.
I don't feel too bad. And you're living and working over there and happy out, yeah?
Yeah, happy
house. Okay.
For the time being. So
thanks,
Roisin. Give my family a wee shout out back home in Donegal.
Well, you better do it properly. Go on.
Oh, God. No, just hello to my mum and dad and siblings and everyone back home in Donegal.
That felt
and I hope I'll be back and at the Rory Gallagher Festival in 2027, but I've every faith in Barry and Lorraine and the whole family and committee that's involved.
Okay, thanks very much indeed. It's a huge festival because it brings a different demographic into the county as well. You know, you have people that like adventuring, you have people that like, the islands or whatever it is. This brings a whole different demographic, different people. 50% of the crowd are from overseas, and it puts a spotlight on it, but it also sort of copper fastens our connection with Rory Gallagher. We shouldn't take that for granted, because Pat Healy is joining us from Cork. Hi, Pat.
Morning, Greg. How are you?
I'm doing good. And would you be inclined to sort of see an opportunity here for a similar or replacement festival in Cork? Because we know Rory Gallagher, super strong connections to your part of the world as well.
Well, Greg, on the outset, we'll always claim Rory as one of our own. Mm. But we know the connection to Ballyshannon, and we will never probably compete with that festival. It's probably the best blues festival on the planet at the minute. That's the personal point of view.
Pat, you have a Ballyshannon. Are you from Cork?
I am from Cork,
But you have a Ballyshannon accent as well. There's Ballyshannon in your accent, I swear.
We make the journey every year, and we go away, we take the van and we go up and we go to the campsite, and the welcome is unnatural on the lakeside campsite with the lads, and we get to know them over the years, and the banter is fantastic and whatever. And whatever's in the water up there in Ballyshannon, it kind of transcends people into such a beautiful atmosphere, and it works. The whole scene, the street festival, the bands, the local, the pubs, the restaurants, everybody's friendly. Even the local Gardaí get hands on with it, and we've had nothing but positivity and a wonderful atmosphere the last couple of years we've been visiting.
And your hope is that it continues, because I'm sure you love coming up and you get a wonderful... The connections in Cork are obvious. Is there any festivals, or have there been any festivals to mark Rory Gallagher's heritage there?
Well, last Sunday we had the first... Well, it's been going on for a while, but it's getting bigger. And last Sunday here on Leaside, we had an open air festival in Fitzgerald's Park. We had the weather to go over it. But it was organised by Sheena, a lady called Sheena Crowley, whose father, Michael Crowley, sold the original Stratocaster to Rory in 1961 for £100, I think.
Okay.
And if you know a little bit about Rory's history, it was bought last year on auction by the government for €1 million, and it's now on show in the National Museum in Dublin. So Sheena organised that last Sunday. And we'd gladly take the Ballyshannon Festival to Leaside, but it would be shameful if it was to happen, because it's just a wonderful weekend. We love it, and the amount of friends we've made over the years up there is phenomenal. And it's just the atmosphere, the friendliness of the people. The people make it, the locals. And nobody's ripped off. Now, we did visit the Marquee. To be honest, I didn't like it.
Okay.
If I'm to be honest with you.
You're
people,
more, you like the street stuff, do you? Bands. You like the organic street pub sort of scene.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
We got to see a young upcoming band there from, and I think they're from Bundoran, a bunch of lads called the Schlacks.
Okay.
The last 2 years. Jesus, they blew everybody away. And they're only all 16, 17
Brilliant.
Years of age.
Wow, okay.
You get to see the wonderful Barry McGivern in Dorian's. You get to see the street, the backs of the trucks, down where he was born, down in the square. It's a wonderful atmosphere, and long may it last.
All right.
And I really wish Barry O'Neill and the locals can really get it back on track for next year.
Pat, finally, what's your favourite pub there to visit?
Oh, I can't remember. Everybody was well. No, I just.
Okay.
Do you know what? No, Greg. It's the street performers.
Yeah.
Go in, you get your couple of beers, and take them all into the streets. But look, it's a shame to lose this thing. And
well, listen.
Honestly,
I think some things are too big to die. And I have I think maybe we spoke to Barry yesterday, and I'm hoping that what he was doing there, because he's a media guy as well, he's got a background in the media, he understands, I hope, and I'm not putting words in his mouth, that he effectively was a reality check, saying, right, you know, there's 48 weeks here, we need to get our finger out. He never said that explicitly, but maybe that could be what would happen. I don't know. Pat, listen, lovely to chat to you. I have never been to Cork, would you believe that? And it's one of the things I'm ashamed of. So,
oh, man. Geez,
I know.
You're missing out big time.
I know.
Listen, a mention.
Go on.
A mention to Father Paddy Dunn.
Okay.
Who's a parish priest there in Ballyshannon?
He was. We've got to move back up to Carrigart now. But yeah, go on, talk to me.
I mentioned to Paddy Dunn, the parish priest in Ballyshannon. He's always welcomed us to the house. And a friend of mine, Jimmy Stafford, he won't forgive me for this, but he said, don't forget to mention last Saturday at the football. I see you, Greg.
All right, Pat. I'm starting to wonder. Maybe you're a Donegal man. After all, this is a big old ruse.
No,
good luck to you. Go on. Good luck. Leave
on,
Bay. Hands off our festival. Good luck to you. We'll look forward to seeing you next year or the year afterwards. All right, bye-bye. Arlene, sorry for holding you there. You are in and around Ballyshannon, aren't you? And the loss of this festival, and it looks like it could be lost for next year, would be devastating.
Oh, absolutely, Greg. Good morning. Thank you for having me on.
It's my pleasure, Arlene.
Yeah, I'm a Ballyshannon woman myself, Greg. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to be honest, the whole town is actually still reeling from the shock of this. I mean, as Roisin was saying there earlier, there had been speculation and rumours and concerns. But when Barry announced that, you know, 2027 was not going ahead, it's a massive shock to everybody.
Yeah.
It's a huge blow to the town, Greg.
And it's not just the economy, because we often go to the finances of it, and it's huge and everything really comes down to money. But whilst this is celebrating the people who have already made waves in the industry. We heard from Pat there referencing the Slacks and others I think that's what they were called. It's also an opportunity, and Ballyshannon has always been great for this, to give, you know, real musicians a platform and an audience and a chance for growth.
That's exactly, I think, the thing that hits a lot of people, Greg, is that, you know, the Rory Gallagher Festival gave young musicians an opportunity to get on a stage and play in front of a crowd and show their talent. I mean, you know, it has kicked off many's a band and really, you know, allowed local talent to be seen and heard. And, you know, what I love actually about the music scene of the Rory Festival is that, you know, it's not just about old rockers like myself arriving every year.
That sounds cool, though. That doesn't sound like, that sounds like a cool way to describe yourself. By the way, an old rocker,
it
I love
absolutely
it.
Is.
Yeah, I love it.
It absolutely is, Greg. You know, Ballyshannon is full of all grey-haired, ponytailed, old ones like myself.
Yeah.
But the brilliant thing about it, Greg, is that, you know, as Pat was saying there earlier, it bridges the gap between generations. You know, the festival was there for everybody, children, young people, old. You know, it allowed younger people to be able to hear the music of Rory Gallagher and all these amazing people that have been at the festivals over the years. You know, Greg, when would you ever get a chance to see Mick Taylor, Eric Bell or Bill Gibbons? You know, it's just incredulous that it could just suddenly be cut off and we lose all of that.
But Arlene, you know, I speaking to Barry yesterday, he said it might take time, but they hope to recoup maybe 75% of the ticket money, 50% or even 25%. But the problem is this is going to be a dragged out, elongated process. Wouldn't it be great to give the public a chance and say, right, you know, let's go fund me, let's raise the 220 grand that's there. Yeah. And down the line, what we'll do then is, if we recoup this money, you have a choice, we could reinvest it into the festival, or what might make people more inclined to put their hands in their pockets, then there could be a donation, a really significant donation to charity. So people would feel that they're supporting the festival, maybe supporting, you know, the local hospice or whatever it might be, but also at the same time, you know, saving the festival. Like, there's a real short window of opportunity to try that. And I think it could work, Arlene.
Well, you know, Greg, I love your optimism. And I have to say, the people of Ballyshannon are also optimistic and keen to try and do something to allow the festival to go ahead in the future. I mean, if you see Facebook at the minute, all the local people are all talking about a GoFundMe or, you know, anything that might raise funds to help get us out of this hole. You know, there's no doubt Roisin was saying there earlier about the amount of work that goes into one festival to another, Greg. Like, my own sister was on the committee there with Roisin.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I know the her mom
volunteers as well. So, you know, there's a real investment.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Paula. And you know, that is the thing as well. Some of us are back home, Greg. But I remember the first year that Horselips played at the Rory Gallagher Festival. I mean, it was like a class reunion for all of us. Yeah. We all bounced to Horselips back in the day in Burndoran. And to have them in Ballyshannon 50, 60 years later, it is just something that can't be allowed to fail, I think. It really brings the town together. And as Roisin was saying, more than 50% of people travelling from all over the world. And to hear Pat say, it is the best blues festival on the planet. That can't be allowed to go.
No, and also
we can't lose that.
You know, I'm old enough to remember Ballyshannon pre-bypass, and some towns thrive and some retract a little.
Yeah.
Ballyshannon, I think, took a big hit with the bypass. I can remember the various shops closing over a relatively short period of time, which makes big events like this that sort of carries businesses for a few months vital. So, you know, there is a real critical element to this in terms of the survival of the businesses that remain, I think.
Of the town itself. You're so right, Greg. I mean, the bypass went in more than 20 years ago and the town has just been dying. And the Rory Galler Festival brought all of that back.
Yeah.
I mean, it just brought buzz back to the town. And, you know, as Pat was saying there earlier as well, there's never a not one ounce of trouble ever, Greg. Mm. I mean, there's very little Gardaí presence at the festival because there's just never any reports of any issues. You know, everyone just enjoys the music and the getting together.
I'm not a rocker, but the times I attend there, it's
you're
really
not an old rocker.
Well, no, I'm not. I'm old, but I'm not a rocker. I'd be more in different types of music. But just my times there, the people of Ballyshannon are great. But the atmosphere, it's a bizarre one because Ballyshannon, you can almost make a best friend in an hour that you couldn't make in another town sometimes for 30 years. But just standing outside Sean Oaks or whatever and people comparing numbers on the bottom of bottles of Buckfast, you know, this kind of crack. I'm not sure if that still goes on. I haven't been there for a while, but, you know, anyway, good times. Would you have gone to them? What was the name of the nightclub at the top of the town? The Millstone, was it?
Oh, the Millstone, Millie back in the day.
You wouldn't have liked
the
that.
Locals called it.
You wouldn't have been in there too much, would you?
Well, you know, I was just a few years old for that crowd.
Mm. Well, here's the thing for you. It was either the first year or the second year. I was DJing around Ballyshannon Bundoran at the time. The first or second year, Barry O'Neill asked me to do a disco in there. And it was around about the time of the Rory Gallagher Festival, right. But I didn't have any rock music or anything like that. But anyway, I scraped some stuff together and I went in and set up. It wasn't an active nightclub at that time, but the gear was still in there. And it only had the top end speakers at the bottom. You know, the bass bins or any of the middle sound wasn't there. So here's me trying to play, you know, rock music with just the top tinny speakers. It was horrendous. And yet, do you know what? Everyone had a good time, but it wasn't because of me. It was just because of the attitude of people.
Greg, how did the crowd go? And I'm sure, no problem whatsoever.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, Ballyshannon is, I mean, it really is such a friendly town. Everybody knows everybody and everybody is welcome. Mm. You know, we meet people at that festival every year. Greg, that we, you know, from the other side of the world, and you just fall into a conversation
for sure because there's a common
the unique atmosphere.
There's a common denominator, and that's the love of music, and it's also too just a very the Ballyshannon Bundoran just chilled people. Listen, thanks Arlene for the chat. Sorry for waffling on.
Not
there,
at but all, Greg.
I'd forgotten about that gig. The Rory Gallagher rock gig that I did with just top end speakers, I'd forgotten about that.
I'm glad I reminded you of a good night.
one of the many nightclubs around Ballyshannon Bundoran that I was the last person to DJ in. Whatever that will tell you, I don't know. All right.
Good on you, Greg.
Good luck. Bye bye. Greg, such a shame if the Rory Gallagher Festival doesn't go ahead. We'll be left with nothing but the brown shoes, brown belts and festivals in Donegal. I've got brown shoes on, I've got a black belt. But yeah, I know what you mean. Let's not have a go at the country folk because it was the Cowboys and what's that other festival? The Cowboys and something other in Leitrim. That is a country music festival. And unfortunately, they may be in bother too because they also were hit by the collapse of tickets.ie. Now, two men from Eastern Europe, but with addresses at Asaro Falls, Ballyshannon, have been jailed for human trafficking for the purpose of labour exploitation. It's significant, but it's particularly significant as this is the first conviction of its type in the state. They also pleaded guilty to money laundering and forgery charges. Superintendent Siobhan Mullahan joins us of the Donegal Garda Division. How significant, good morning to you, Siobhan, first and foremost, how significant is this? Because whilst it's the first conviction of its type in the state, this will obviously pave the way for future convictions.
Yes, good morning, Greg. Absolutely. I suppose we have never had a conviction in the state for human trafficking for labour exploitation. There would have been convictions for human trafficking for sexual exploitation. I suppose it was a difficult crime to prove, but I suppose the investigation carried out in the Donegal Division that you mentioned is a template now for other investigations. And I suppose we know the indicators to look out for people that have been trafficked And it was a comprehensive investigation in terms of gathering evidence, both locally, nationally and internationally. So we have the template there, and I know there are other cases under investigation throughout Ireland now, but I suppose a lot of people, they don't realise that people have been trafficked, but labour exploitation, it really affects areas such as agriculture and construction, entertainment and service industry. So, it's hidden in plain sight a lot of the time that people aren't aware of. So hopefully yesterday's convictions and sentencing will raise awareness of this crime.
Yeah, in this case, 7 victims, including a woman and 6 men, were recruited by deception in Latvia, promised employment, a good salary, accommodation and a better life. The challenge is, I suppose, is making people who are victims of it aware that, A, it is a crime, but B, that they can reach out. Because I presume part of this, and I'm not speaking of this specific case, is a coercive element of it. And you know, it's the challenge here, isn't it, is to try and make sure we identify those that are victims of this type of crime, because it might be difficult for them to come forward.
Yeah, it definitely is difficult. And for human trafficking, it's usually people that are vulnerable and down on their luck, maybe in their home country, and they're offered unrealistic things in a new country, and they're brought over and they're exploited, or they've come over and they're exploited here by other people. And even if they do consent to working, they don't consent to being exploited or being forced to work too many hours, or, you know, sleeping, have no privacy, or sleeping in shared or overcrowded spaces, and not being able to move freely and things like that. So, you know, in this case, I suppose that all was highlighted. And a lot of the time, these people, they don't speak English, and they're very reliant on those that have English, and usually that's who's employed them or trafficked them. So definitely they are very vulnerable. But there is help out there for it. And I suppose if people do suspect that somebody might have been trafficked, they can contact their local Garda station. Gardaí have been trained on human trafficking and indicators. Or you can free phone 1800 666 111, or you can email your concerns or suspicions. There's a specific website and a specific email address, Greg, blueblindfold@garda.ie as well. And it's only just concerns, and we will look into it.
Okay.
You know.
Good stuff. Okay, we had the first coercive control conviction in this county, and it did lay the blueprint for further convictions in that space. And this also will do that. So it's good to see these things being led out by our own Donegal Gardaí. Thank you, Siobhan.
Thanks very much, Greg. Good
Look
morning.
After yourself. Good morning to you. Garda Superintendent Siobhan Mullihan there of the Donegal Garda Division. That's where we have to leave it on the Greg Hughes Show. It's been a wonderful week. Thank you so much for all of your interaction, etc. We'll be back bright and early Monday morning from 9 a.m. But for me, Greg Hughes, and Caroline Orr, who researches and produces this show, assisted by Shannon Wilkin, have a wonderful weekend.